Our time at home and the tech we're using to communicate is probably the new language of film. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. Traditional film and television production has obviously been halted in the wake of the COVID-19 outbreak. But even when production does resume, this time that we're in could have a profound impact on the way we make movies in the future. People at home are getting super creative with video, whether it's compilations of sing-alongs over video chat or episodes of SNL filmed all at home. Anne Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post, and she says all of this will eventually start showing up in the movies.
You know, one of the early examples that brought me optimism was this amazing video that a member of the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, Jeffrey Beecher, did of members of his orchestra performing the Appalachian Spring. Mm-hmm. He very ingeniously, you know, sent out the click track to all of his musicians, and they filmed themselves on their iPhones, but then he edited it to resemble a Zoom video that found its way into this artistic language that he used that was kind of universal and also very specific to this particular time. And now we're seeing television episodes being filmed that way. The Parks and Recreation reunion was formed to resemble a video conferencing. There will be a feature movie made on Zoom. I'm just convinced of it, and it's just a matter of when and who will make it.
Do you think it will be made on Zoom because it will be the only tool available and people will be in quarantine, or because it has now become sort of this, like you said, immediately recognizable visual language?
I think mostly the latter. And I do think that it will be the lingua franca of this time. There is no doubt in my mind. Anybody who's telling a story about this time, that's the way you're going to have to make it. Even if you're not literally making it that way, you're going to need to edit it and tweak it to resemble that, because it's just that's literally where we are. I don't want to call it a revolution necessarily, but just the aesthetic promise of that has yet to be fully plumbed.
Yeah. How long will that pipeline be, do you think? I mean, is it going to be like in 2 years, all of a sudden every movie has the look of, you know, spring 2020?
Movies, feature films, major feature films, generally, you know, you're looking at a year and a half, 2 year kind of a lag time. Mm-hmm. So then you run the risk of looking kind of dated by that time. You know, I think it'll have to happen sooner than that. I mean, it's interesting kind of looking back on all the different ways that filmmakers responded to, you know, the iPhone. You know, like, they've always responded to technological innovation, both in terms of just the content of their films and then their formal innovation. But yeah, I think that 2 year lag time does kind of run the risk of looking a little bit like you're behind the curve.
And then I guess one of the other legs, of course, is how and where we watch these films. You've written about small art house cinemas to show films in this time and get by economically. Tell me about that.
When theaters closed in March, it was mostly a function of local ordinances. You know, it wasn't that they were caught unawares, but they were proceeding accordingly until they couldn't anymore. For the most part, the big chains closed and that was it. But these small independent theaters very quickly pivoted in very responsive and creative ways. And many of them went to these digital streaming options where they could direct their patrons to their websites where they could access digital links to some of the movies that they had already been playing and some actually kind of brand new movies to their audiences. And I think it was a real example of how that independent art house world has always been about cultivating their audience, capturing their audience, you know, being able to communicate with them via email and newsletters and extra programming and clubs. And that's been the way they do their business anyway. But then that turned out to be just such a crucial factor in them writing this out in a way that kept their audience with them, provided them something to do and to watch during this time when everybody's desperate for something new to watch. And, you know, keep a little bit of revenue coming in, you know, not millions and millions of dollars, but enough to make a little bit of a difference. And with a business that's so, the margins are so razor thin anyway, a little goes a long way. And they're very resourceful with using those dollars. So I've been really, really impressed to see how those theaters and the distributors who have given them the movies to show have really banded together to kind of forge through this moment.
Yeah, you almost wonder what places like that with communities like that could be able to build when they don't have a geographic restriction in some ways.
Exactly. And I think a lot of them are discovering that very thing. You know, I spoke with the executive director of a nonprofit theater in Baltimore where I live, and she's getting viewers from Canada and Alaska. And, you know, I think it'll be very interesting to watch what sticks, you know, after people do feel comfortable and liberated to come back into the theaters. Some untapped audiences have been identified in this. And I know for a fact that a lot of these theaters have zero intention of letting them go. You know, I mean, they are very interested in keeping them around and learning more about them and learning more about how best to communicate with them going forward. And that's true of their local audiences, too, by the way.
How long lasting do you think these changes will be? Like, when you look back on, you know, history, are there times when either the available tech, like the Zoom thing, or just the events of the day affected artistic choices for a really long time?
Well, I mean, you can even look back at the French New Wave and, you know, direct cinema in America. We think of those as aesthetic movements. You know, the cameras were lighter. They did have, they had portable sound systems that allowed them to record sound in a different way and that kind of freed them up to be more mobile and more responsive and spontaneous. I can also see Zoom getting really tiresome. You know, if people have been on Zoom all day in their meetings, mm-hmm. it may be that the last thing they want to see is a movie that's using that same grammar. You know, they want to get away from that. But again, I think it does have this kind of now symbolic and universality to it that does make it, and at least if not grammar unto itself, an element of style. You know, like it'll come to signify something very real to people. And in terms of the streaming, I do think that the digital streaming with these independent theaters and art houses, I could see many of them. You know, a lot of them, most of them don't have a whole lot of screens in their buildings. They might have two or three max. And so if they can extend the life of a title and offer it to their patrons who may not have been able to get out to the physical theater in the weeks that it was playing, if they can come to some kind of mutually acceptable agreement with the filmmakers and the distributors to make that available to their patrons going forward, I can see that sticking around. It's delicate and it'll have to be negotiated, but I think there's potential there. I mean, one of the main things I hear from my readers is, oh, you gave that movie such a good review, but by the time I got around to going to the theater, it was gone, you know, because there's such a glut of content coming in all the time that it can get a little Darwinian. So I feel like if that could give people an option that's acceptable and to everyone involved, then I think that could be a really helpful legacy to this and something that will endure.
Anne Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post. Another thing she told us is that she thinks we'll always remember what we were watching while we were in quarantine, which is kind of fascinating. So tell us what you've been watching. Let us know. I could use a recommendation. We are at mptech@marketplace.org or on Twitter. I'm at Molly Wood. And now for some related links. The Financial Times had a piece last week about how Netflix is trying to resume production. It started shooting in Iceland, South Korea, and Japan, and said it will resume production in Sweden this month and start up in Norway in July. Netflix execs told the FT that shooting has really changed. There are face masks and hand sanitizer everywhere, of course. Buffet lunches are gone. Makeout scenes and crowd scenes will be postponed. Who knows for how long? But there's an interesting quote in there about who will be willing to come to work. I mean, it's one thing if you're a struggling actor, but are big-name movie stars going to take the risk? But maybe for that struggling actor, this is big break time with a mask on. Also, finally, our prayers and entreaties have been heard. Tribeca Enterprises, IMAX, and AT&T are teaming up to launch drive-ins. Yeah, but drive-ins with fancy IMAX tech. Starting June 25th, new and old movies, music performances, and sports will be shown in drive-in theaters around the country. Which, I'm sorry, but yes, If anything good comes out of this, let it be the return of the drive-in, because it is just the best. Good news Monday, everyone. We can try. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.